This audio file is copyright about FactNet. All rights are reserved. Scott Robertson. Scott Robertson is an expert in the field of air cars, that is cars that run on compressed air. His website can be found at http://www.aircaraccess.com. Ken Odwy, JR, webmaster of About FactNet. The following interview was conducted by email, because it was impractical to do it by phone for several reasons. To hear the interview, you can use the RoboReader device. Cars that run on air are all the talk right now, with a company in India talking about exporting them to the US next year. Ken, would you please tell my audience your background? Scott Robertson. My dad was a soil conservationist for the USDA, inspired by his living through the Dust Bowl, which was caused by bad farming practices. I wanted to be a hippie when I grew up, but he talked me into trying piano tuning instead. I had the hobby of ripping pianos apart and trying to fix them, so he sent me to tech school, and I was a piano technician, on and off until 1997. I traveled around and worked lots of odd jobs, and chose air car research as my career, even though it didn't pay me anything. I really wanted to save the world, but have since given up that goal. Ken, please tell us how you got interested in air cars. Scott Robertson. When I was 13, I rebuilt my parents' player piano. That is a piano that plays by itself, and it runs on air. It is an air-powered computer from the early 1900s. They were the predecessor of the phonographs and radios as the most popular form of family entertainment back when Americans still liked to sing. The coded tape in a player piano is a roll of paper with holes punched in it, and it is turned by an air motor with bellows for pistons. That little motor is very powerful, and that is how I got the idea for air cars. Ken, would you tell us exactly what an air car is? Scott Robertson. An air car is any car that runs on a pressure differential, with air the preferred fluid, since it is readily available almost everywhere on Earth. You can also run air cars on nitrogen, and you can use suction, or a combination of suction and pressure. You can use compressed fluids like compressed air, or you can use cryogenic fluids, like liquid nitrogen or liquid air, which expand when warmed up and drive the same kind of engine, an expansion engine, that a compressed fluid will operate. But in general, when people say air car, they re talking about a car that carries tanks on board with compressed air in them. Straight air cars are either standard, they stop at air stations to refuel, or self-fueling, which use compressors on board to extend the range of the car, and supposedly can keep their own tanks full, based on the fact that our atmosphere is heated by the sun 24/7, and the real fuel of the air engine is heat. The expansion engine is the same kind of engine that's used to run steam cars and steam locomotives. It is ideal for cars since it has maximum climbing and starting torque at low engine speeds, unlike the internal combustion IC engine, which needs high RPMs to get any torque. Ken, I have read that an ordinary car engine can be made to run on compressed air. Is this true, and if so, is it practical? Scott Robertson. I met a man in 1980 who used to do it in 1949 with a friend. He said they drove their cars from coast to coast, but had problems due to their lack of engineering ability. Their last air car blew a piston out the top of the engine, out through the hood, and up into the sky, and they never saw it again. Scott Robertson. The IC engine is already a compressed air engine and compressor combined, with a little gasoline or diesel squirts it in to ruin its performance, and create a lot of jobs, and a class of billionaires. It definitely increases the gross national product to squirt gasoline into air engines, and then start it on fire. With the emphasis on gross. A man named Leroy K. Rogers of Fort Myers, Florida has built air cars, and has a patent on his four-cycle air engine conversion. He wanted to put out a conversion kit, but got cold feet for various reasons. Mainly, he became sought after by so many people that his home life was ruined. He said the automakers pooled their money and offered him $1 billion for his invention, but he refused to sell it to them because he was afraid they just wanted to shelve it to hide it from the world. Is it practical? Air engines can be very small for their output, depending on the type, although the more efficient varieties are bigger. Maybe that is something to take advantage of. I think it would be better to use the IC engine as a compressor, and put a little air turbine on it in place of the starter motor, put a stronger flywheel gear on, and do it that way. A little air turbine can run a car. The existing clutch could be used to unload the motor for starting and climbing, and re-engage to use the compressor as a tank warmer for regenerative braking, coasting down hills, or wherever you have extra power to make it go. They use air turbines as starter motors on big jet engines. But they re not very efficient until they get up to speed, so maybe instead the IC engine could be both engine and compressor. Lee Rogers solved that by making his air engine 4 cycle. The engine itself compresses some of its own air on every fourth stroke with an added supercharger, and also maybe a small high-pressure compressor that puts out about 600 psi. I am telling you this from memory, and of course, he has his secrets which I wouldn't know. One advantage of a 4-cycle air engine is that its compression heat will be used immediately. That's a big deal, because the normal compressor gives away literally all of its work as heat, which all dissipates. That is the compressed air industry's big secret. I don't know who told them to keep silent about it, but don't the all the big industrial sectors work together? Ken. How popular has the air car become in areas where it has been out? Scott Robertson. In 1907, Charles B. Hodges patented a two-stage air engine, which expanded the same air in two consecutive pistons. Between the two stages, a heat exchanger warmed the air, expanding the air supply by absorbing heat from the environment. This is possible because compressed air gets cold when it expands, so an air engine is part of a refrigeration cycle, or a heat pump cycle, by drawing free heat into itself from the surrounding air. The compound air engine was used all over the coal mining areas back east in the US, then in Europe it was improved. They used three expansion stages, three successive pistons, each expanding the same air, with free heat expanding the air supply, before all three stages. I read in a technical journal that there were 624 of these three-stage air engines being used in one coal field alone in Germany. By extrapolation, then, I would guess there might have been thousands of these things all told in mining operations in Europe. Air is very safe in coal mines where there are explosive gases, so you don't want a hot engine or one that sparks. At their top operating conditions, these engines increased their range 60% with the addition of ambient heat. During WWII, all trace of these engines disappeared from the textbooks, and the term air engine was no longer used in textbooks. But before the war, the Germans had developed a hybrid compressed air diesel locomotive engine, not a little mine shuttle, but a big full-size 1200 horsepower locomotive. It used an air engine to run the wheels, and a diesel engine to run the compressor. The hot water used to cool the diesel engine was injected directly into the air engine cylinders along with the compressed air, and the result was a 26% savings over a straight diesel's fuel cost. That was in 1931. But the first air car advocate I know of, aside from the father of modern physics, James Clerk Maxwell, was General Hermann Haupt. He threw his influence and technical writing ability behind the move to advance the air engine in the 1890s. Before that, he was President Lincoln's railroad chief during the Civil War. He wrote a book comparing the various alternatives, since it was not yet clear that the IC engine or electric car was going to be taken seriously. But the air engine was finished. It is such a simple thing. There are thousands of configurations that could be made to work, so there is plenty of room for competition, and General Haupt was convinced, based on his experience as a civil engineer, that air was the way to go. He supported a project to run air-powered passenger trolleys in New York City, and there was a huge air station put up, a 1000 HP compressor that filled a two-story building. The compressor was run by steam engines, and I believe they used hot water exhausted by the steam engines to fill hot water tanks aboard the air cars when they stopped to refuel. The key to air cars is to add heat. It is 7 times cheaper to heat existing compressed air, and it is to compress more air, in regards to the gain that can be had either way. There were 3 different inventors who got their air cars into the technical journals regularly during the 1890s. First was Mikursky, then Hardy, championed by General Haupt, then Hoadley and Knight. The problem with compressed air is it's too simple, safe, clean, and quiet. Almost un-American. The big industrial people went with the highest profit maker, maybe assuming that petroleum was here to stay. It's hard to sell air when we're surrounded by it, and anyone can buy an air compressor. I have to mention that, like gas cars, the air car can be refueled in a minute or two. Not directly from a compressor, but from a big high-pressure tank that is kept full by a huge compressor. So if there is a short range, say 50 miles between fill-ups, then it's not that big of a deal to stop and fuel up. Ken. The air car has only made it into the news in the US in the last couple of months. How long has it been around? Scott Robertson. The air car has been in the news occasionally a lot in recent years, maybe for 10 years or more, because an inventor in France, Guy Negret, has been getting a lot of publicity selling franchises for air car factories based on his patents. He is an auto professional and has put air cars on the map again after years of silence while petroleum had its way. The first time I searched the internet for air cars, I only got 15 hits. Guy Negret changed all that. The first air car plans were in the 1880s. They wanted to put a lightweight bullet car in an airtight subway tunnel, engineless, and have it pushed along by a large volume of low-pressure air. It was New York City's first subway, though it didn't catch on since it wasn't practical. Then they thought of a third rail concept, where the air supply runs along the track, and a flexible pipe thing reaches down from the engine car to take its air supply out of the pipe continuously. They didn't have the materials back then to make the seals work, but the air removal company now has a similar air-powered train in daily use in a couple places around the world, I think it's Jakarta and Brazil. It was during the oil crisis of the 1970s when the US reached its peak oil supply and started down the other side that people got serious about air again. Air car builder Bill Truitt of McKees Rocks, Bach, had built his first air car with his father in 1920, and in the 1970s he perfected his design with his third air car. He drove it 2,000 or 3,000 miles without a fill-up, since it had onboard compressors, and he knew the secret by then. He got a lot of unwanted attention, people sneaking around his garage, accosting him with offers, etc., and he finally gave his design to the US Army and NASA. Truitt would not divulge the real secret that he used to keep his tanks full, but it certainly involved upgrading ambient heat into a usable form, compressed air. Heat pumps can heat a house in the middle of winter, supplying heat that exists, unknowable to our senses, in cold winter air by concentrating it into an upgraded form to heat a house. The heat pump uses 3 times less electrical energy to do this than the heat energy they supply. That's why Bill Truitt and Lee Rogers and others have to stop. It's too good to be true, and having that kind of secret makes them too popular, or too unpopular with all the wrong people. Ken. I have heard that the modern theory of compressed air powering a vehicle has been known for at least 30 years. Is this true, and if so, why haven't we heard of their cars before this? Scott Robertson. I guess I've even harping on that theme already. Ken. Do you think that the big oil companies have prevented companies like Ford and General Motors from coming out with their own air car? Scott Robertson. I am not a student of industrial history, but my guess is that the big oil companies and the big car companies are the best of friends at a deep level. I don't believe in conspiracy theory. I believe that people get together to plan successful competition against their industrial enemies. So I believe in conspiracy as the nature of economic reality. Success is always a team effort, and competition is all about vanquishing an enemy. Ford has been involved with research and development on a hybrid air car invented by a professor from UCLA. I don't know how that's coming along. Ken. Besides the fuel being cheaper, after all it uses compressed air, is the car cheaper to build and sell than a typical gasoline-powered car, and if so, why? Scott Robertson. Yes, because it's the simplest possible engine. Forget about the carburetor, cooling system, frequent oil changes, because it runs cold, not hot. You can use 2 big cylinders instead of a bunch of little ones, and run the engine slow instead of fast, so it lasts longer and has less parts. The air engine was perfected back when gas engines and electric motors were not sure things. You could drive air cars all day, despite their short range, because a fill-up only takes a few minutes. Compressed air can be free with the only cost the purchase and maintenance of the equipment. There have been windmill-powered air stations, And in Grass Valley, CA, you can see a big Pelton wheel, that's a water wheel, that ran a 1,000 horsepower compressor supplying two of the biggest gold mines in the world with all their ventilation and two-layer. Before 1900, compressed air was piped all over Paris, France, as a standard utility, like we have natural gas now. They had their powered trolleys and big outdoor clocks on street corners, run by air. Ken. Recently a news item came out that stated that the air car was not only coming to America in 2009, but it would be a six-passenger and have about 100 miles range and run at 95 miles per hour. Do you think that this is true? Scott Robertson. Please send me that news item and I'll add it to my collection. No, I hadn't heard it, but it could happen. I collected every word I heard or could find in a library about air cars for over 25 years. Because of Guy Negre, the internet became full of information itself. Then I retired from air car research and went back to my first love, which is grammar and linguistic study. I am no engineer. I love to research and think. I was not well suited for actually building things, though I still wish I was. Ken. One thing baffles me: why must the car be refilled with compressed air? Why can't a compressor be built into the vehicle and keep the air tank full? Scott Robertson. This is a can of worms, but I am famous for opening cans of worms. Standard engineering practice says that you can't create energy, and you can't reuse the same energy to do the same thing. These are the laws of thermodynamics, and they are correct. When you devise a plant to create energy, that is a perpetual motion machine of the first kind, because it defies the first law of thermodynamics, and it can't be done. Only God can create energy, and to my knowledge he stopped when he stopped. You'll have to ask Einstein for the details. A design that attempts to reuse the same energy over and over to run a machine is a perpetual motion machine of the second kind. It can't be done. Perpetual motion is impossible, but it is very attractive to amateur thinkers, idea people who don't have a technical background. It is because of the propensity for unrealistic idealists to want the impossible that engineering as a whole has developed a zero-tolerance attitude toward anything that seems to be providing its own source of energy, and understandably, so any engineer who presents his company with a perpetual motion scheme is going to find himself flipping burgers before he knows what hit him. It doesn't pay to push the envelope in that particular direction. I already mentioned heat pumps. They heat a house with 3 units of energy heat energy from the surrounding atmosphere, while they only consume 1 unit of electrical energy. This is ordinary business. It is not in violation of any law. You buy it at Home Depot. It works because the heat is put in the atmosphere by the sun all day and all night. The atmosphere weighs 4 quadrillion tons, and if it wasn't heated by the sun, it would fall to the earth as snow. A heat pump is a cycle that is a tricky design that makes something special happen, like the Otto cycle that runs the IC engine against all odds, or the diesel cycle that does something similar. The heat pump cycle collects energy by creating a very cold spot that absorbs heat from the surrounding air even during winter. Absolute zero is 460 degrees below zero Fahrenheit, so there is a lot of heat in the air that we don't feel, because our skin temperature is about 92 degrees F. The air engine expands air, and expanding gases push a piston because they convert heat into the mechanical energy of the moving piston. Pressure is the measure of air's ability to expand due to a difference between its own pressure and the pressure of the atmosphere. Pressure is not energy. Heat is the energy source of an air car. The typical air compressor is a cycle, that is, a trick used to get air into a tank, so we can use its energy later by letting it expand. We make the mistake of assuming that the air compression cycle we know is the only way of getting air into a tank, and that is like assuming that the earth is flat. Sure, it's flat downtown, but back off a ways, get some perspective, and it's round. Asking the status quo world of engineering and industry to rethink its approach to compressed air is like Galileo telling us that the earth revolves around the sun. He was imprisoned for it. Or Columbus saying the earth was round. He was right, by the way. But a prophet is not welcome in his own land, according to the Bible. The self-fueling air engine, if it works, does so by using ambient heat in a tricky cycle of some kind, that is in effect a heat pump. But getting a professional engineer or any other technically trained person involved in working on an idea like that is nearly impossible. That in spite of the fact that engineers are generally taught little or nothing about compressed air in school. And try finding a textbook on the topic, one that starts with the thermodynamic basics and builds to a general theory of how and why air engines work. For that matter, try finding a textbook that even uses the term air engine. It will be dated around 1930 or earlier. Ken, is there any reason for a car that runs on compressed air to be structurally less strong than a traditional car? Scott Robertson. No, because of the short range, maybe 40 or 50 miles for the standard air car, with no onboard compressor, people want to build the whole thing out of plastic so it will be lighter and go farther. This is based on misguided thinking. You can't be driving something like that on the road when something big and heavy comes along, it is not safe. You have to have a way of heating the air so the car will be powerful and go farther. On the other hand, the American dream we know, which is an aberration of history because of the petroleum vacation we've all been on for the past very few generations, apparently includes this myth that we have to go fast and we have to go far. I live in the Philippines and guess what? The need to go fast and far ain't absolute. People will relearn new expectations, as he did. He ripe a 7 pesos for a ride in his sidecar powered by an old worn-out motorcycle engine. There are seats for 6, but it fits maybe 15 people, because Filipinos like to share their space. A motorcycle pulling a sidecar with a couple people, a pig, a couple of chickens, a couple bags of rice, some babies, and a couple bunches of bananas, doesn't he go fast? And the gas tank is small, it has to be refilled several times a day. Gasoline is sold in used liter bottles that started life as Coca-Cola bottles. Usually a half liter of gas is bought at a time. That is reality for most of the world. When petroleum runs out, these folks will go back to wagons pulled by horses and water buffalo with nary a whimper. But I wouldn't want to be living in the US when the petroleum runs out. Ken, if air cars become popular, do you foresee the price of compressed air going up? Scott Robertson. If left to the industrialists, of course they'll try to monopolize it, and to some extent they will succeed, since the backyard mechanic has been marginalized and turned into a speed freak on welfare in our country. However, air has the power to give itself to us, because it is always there when we need it, so I would hope to see the rebirth of the backyard mechanic, people building their own air cars, doing their own conversions, recycling the broken down hulks that litter our cities, towns, and farms. If the American spirit hasn't been completely broken by the consumerist mentality, then there is a chance that we'll get off our sofa, turn off the TV, and go back to taking care of ourselves. In that event, those who work together for the common good can have their own neighborhood air stations and cooperatives, and never mind what the billionaires want to charge us for the stuff. Ken, will a car like this need air that is under so much pressure that we can't supply it with one of those compressors that plug into an electrical socket? Scott Robertson. Yes or no, depending on the type of their car. A standard air car that needs to stop for fill-ups will have high pressure tanks, 3,000 to 4,000 psi, so it can hopefully go several dozen miles between fill-ups. On the other hand, the idea of a self-fueling design, if it is possible, is to bring down the size and pressure of the tanks, so there is room for lots of people in the car, dogs and cats and kids and TVs, or whatever people carry in their cars these days. DVD players, I don't know, I haven't driven a car in 3 years. The little shop compressor you buy at Sears puts out maybe 120 psi tops. An air engine can run on that, but probably will rather run on 140 to 160, or even up to 400 to 500 psi depending on the design. You need 3, 4, or 5 stage compressors to get high pressure air economically, because of the extra time the compressing takes with more opportunity for cooling. Ken, do you think that the car will have a special fitting on it that will preclude us from filling it at home? Scott Robertson. If so, your friendly neighborhood backyard mechanic will help you yank it off. Ken, I heard that the car company producing the car in India is working on a way to increase the volume of air so that the tanks would take the car further. Is this true if you know? Scott Robertson. I don't know. Tata Motors is the biggest car company in India and has struck a deal with Gina Gray to produce his cars. Nobody has made it to the market with his car yet, but like I said, he has put air cars on the map again, the internet at least, so we should be grateful to him for that. The problem with air is that it weighs more than we think, so if you carry enough air to go 200 miles between fill-ups, the air itself might weigh a ton. So you have to concentrate on a way of reducing the air consumption of the engine instead of increasing the pressure and size of the tanks. That and also to find a way of replenishing or partially replenishing the tanks, at least with regenerative braking if nothing else. An air car with no braking compressor is only half an air car. You can't stop any car with brakes alone unless you want to replace your brake linings 10 times a year. We all use compression braking, big trucks use it a lot. The air car has the distinct and unique advantage of working better in stop and go driving. That was proven on the streets of New York City over 100 years ago. The Hardy locomotives used the air engine as a compressor when stopping, slowing down, or going down hills, resulting in a tank of hot air instead of a tank of cold air. As air pressure goes down, the air gets continuously colder, and you really need to do something about that. Heat doesn't weigh a thing and it doesn't take up much space. Last time I checked, you have to stop thinking of air as something you keep in a tank, and start thinking of it as something you can't get away from. It's everywhere. Take it, use it, give it back unchanged. That's the air car principle. The smaller the tanks, and the lower the pressure, the more success the air car will see. I have to cover the concepts of hybrids and closed cycles. Hybrid air cars store gasoline and run an IC engine which runs the compressor. The IC engine runs at its optimal speed, so the gas burns more cleanly and efficiently, and air is used at what it does best, starting the car and keeping it going. Getting gas cars to do that is really a problem because they re smelly, foul things that just want to blow themselves up, not purr smoothly down the street. The best we can do with them is run IC engines at one speed all the time in a hybrid. Closed cycle air engines put the exhaust of the air engine back into a compressor before it loses its last bit of pressure and recompress it. The advantage is smaller equipment. Since the air going into the compressor is already small, that is in a compressed state, therefore the compressor is also smaller for a given amount of atmosphere being compressed. The disadvantage is that it's a hot system. So how do you take advantage of a cold spot in the cycle to absorb ambient heat? But everyone should learn in kindergarten, as General Haupt informs us in his book, that adding 100 psi to a pound of air is cheaper at an already elevated pressure than to do the same thing from atmospheric pressure. That is because less heating takes place if the air is already somewhat compressed. So less work is necessary to compress it some more. Why can't either a higher pressure tank be installed on the cars or a bigger tank? Scott Robertson. High-pressure air is dangerous if there is a leak. It can blind you, or deafen you if you reach too close to it. If air is suddenly released all at once, it makes a very loud sound, or a jet of high-pressure air escaping through a small hole can hurt you. Also, a loose tank with a broken-off valve can fly, like a missile right, through a brick wall. As with any form of concentrated energy, you have to have safety practices, and encourage the untrained to get trained, before handling the stuff. I almost got killed once in my workshop by doing something without thinking first, and another time a big tongue cat 200 psi lost pressure suddenly when a gasket blew out, with my head right next to it. So you have to learn along the way, but use common sense. Compressed air is the safest form of concentrated energy known to man, but not if you let it kill you. Bigger tanks, where will the people sit? We could go back to large mass transportation, like trains and buses, and we probably should, and probably will. The passenger car might not live through the century no matter what powers it. In a big vehicle you can line the underbelly with long tanks, but on a passenger car your options are limited. Also, on a big bus or train you can put pedals under every passenger's feet, and make them pay for their ride by contributing to the turning of the compressor shaft. You can't make gasoline that way. I am serious. How do you feel the air car stacks up against the fuel cell car, or any of the potential other techniques for powering an auto, such as electrical or hydrogen? I don't know anything about fuel cells. I heard that hydrogen takes more power to make than it delivers, which could be a problem if your hydrogen fuel is manufactured in a factory that is powered on hydrogen. Also, hydrogen engines exhaust water, which is supposed to be an advantage, but in winter do you want a lot of water on the street? Not that I know of. Personally, I hate driving on a sheet of ice. Electric batteries are heavy and toxic and have a short life, so they have to be replaced every few years at a huge cost. They are not environmentally inert like worn out air tanks. How long does it take to wear out an air tank? Maybe longer than the life of the car. As for exotic materials used to make batteries better, where are we going to mine these materials? The moon or Jupiter? The electric car is about as environmentally friendly as what makes it go: coal and petroleum power generating plants, evil batteries that have no place to go when they die, short range and long recharge time. The electric motor is very heavy and expensive. I helped air car inventor Terry Miller run his air car show in 1985 when he was a main attraction at the Wichita Energy Expo. We had people lined up all day and all night to ride in the air car, which looked like a workbench on wheels, because that's exactly what it was. While the shiny new electric car next to us sat idle most of the weekend, its owner looking very depressed. People love their cars. The idea of running a car on the thing that makes our bodies alive naturally speaks to the human heart and spirit. The alternatives are a waste of time. It's air or back to the ox cart. Ken. Cars that run on compressed air seem to be a threat to big oil. Do you foresee that big oil will either buy out all the patents or the auto companies that produce the cars? Scott Robertson. The oil companies will do what they can to monopolize the automobile until the day it costs more than a barrel of oil to squeeze a barrel of oil out of the ground. Then they'll just pursue some other way of making a vast profit from our gullibility, laziness, and greed. People aren't hard to manipulate and exploit if you re a corporate marketeer with no conscience. But they have nothing against air cars, as such, it isn't personal. Of course, once we have air in our car as fuel tanks, someone will figure out how to hit us with a breathing tax. I hope I don't live that long. They'll probably tell you that air is bad for you, and put a gas mask with a meter on your face and send a meter reader to see you once a month. If you don't pay, they plug your mouth hole. It would make a good Woody Allen movie. Ken. It would seem to me that this technology lends itself to many other uses. Do you see an air-powered plane in our future? Scott Robertson. Bill Truitt said his engine was used to power a helicopter by the U.S. Army, but the helicopter could only go 50 feet in the air. The power needed is vast, and air gets colder and less dense as you go higher. I don't know much about it, but I am kind of skeptical that we even need air travel. Ken. What about air-powered outboards? This would certainly eliminate the occasional explosions that gasoline-powered boats face. Scott Robertson. Ships and boats, except submarines, have access to not only air, but also to the best source of ambient heat, which is seawater. Water holds a lot more heat than air, so if self-fueling air engines can be made to work, then they can be made to work better in boats. And at sea level, air is nice and dense, unlike up in the sky. And it's exposed to the sun. Ken. What other uses could we put air-powered engines to? Scott Robertson. There is at least one company today that will pipe compressed air to your business or home. Anything that is done mechanically can be done by air. The first artificial hearts were run by air. I already mentioned Paris. I would like an air-powered blender because my wife uses ours to crush ice, so it doesn't last very long. Air motors, unlike electric motors, are totally undamaged by stalling. That's why they reused for rock drills. Ken. Do you think that there is any application for compressed air engines in the field of space travel? Scott Robertson. No. Ken. I have read that if auxiliary power was used, say about 8 gallons of biodiesel, the air car could travel as far as 1,000 miles between fill-ups. Is this correct, and if so, please explain the type of auxiliary engine that would be used? Scott Robertson. Just heat the air with the fuel. An engineer of the olden days, who was also a textbook writer, published an article in the technical journal about closed-cycle pneumatic power plants. He said that any time you add more heat to compressed air by any source and what was added to it by the compressor that compressed it, then you will have an overunity situation. In other words, the tank pressure will not go down. I already mentioned that it is 7 times less costly to add heat to existing compressed air than to compress more air. I get all this information from technical journals, I don't make it up. I never would have dreamed all this stuff could be true. In 1979 when I started, I was working at a pipe organ factory, and pipe organs run on low pressure air. I just wanted to make a little wooden bellows car, like the bamboo car on Gilligan's Island, but you'd pedal a bellows instead of pedaling the wheels. Before that I thought maybe you could run a car on a very loud sound. Not so far off, they re already running refrigerators on sound. Ken. Who is producing air cars now? Scott Robertson. As for actual production, nobody. Everyone is waiting to see if Tata Motors in India really puts Gyna Grazer car on the market. I hope they do, because it will break the ice and get the ball rolling. There is a company in Korea that wants to develop an air electric hybrid and an inventor in Australia named Anthony Di Pietro, whose design is well liked by those who have reviewed his work. I don't know if Ford really intends to put their hybrid on the market or if they are still working on it. Ken. I noticed that some of the vehicles that are rated at 150 miles between fill-ups have only 25 horsepower. If I have a car with about 140 horsepower and it weighs about 2,600 pounds, much as the Honda Civic, what sort of range do you think that I would get on a tank of compressed air? Scott Robertson. It is not that straightforward to compare horsepower between IC engines and air engines. It is torque that really turns an axle, that is twisting force, not horsepower. The expansion engine has its best torque at zero plus speed, that is, starting speed. So if it starts up a hill, the engine just slows down until its torque rises to meet the challenge, resulting in huge climbing power and starting power. I mean torque. Big horsepower is needed from gas engines because they are literally sickly. They have a temperature they literally want to explode, and it is a miracle that anyone ever got one to work. A miracle from the dark side, I might add. From an old engineering article we learned that a 20 horsepower steam car that has an expansion engine identical to an air engine will easily overtake an 80 horsepower gas car going up the hill. Terry Miller's prototype air car, which I drove for 2 days, was made of bolted together parts bought from the hardware store, and with no shock absorbers, it was scary at 42 miles per hour. Its engine had less than 5 horsepower. I made a little go-kart once from a worn-out, leaky old wood-boring air drill that I bought at a junkyard and a scuba tank with 120 size shop air. I sat it down headed uphill and opened the valve and it started so fast up a hill that I couldn't control the steering. I don't think Henry Ford had that problem with his first car. Lee Rogers's air car will lift the front wheels from the pavement if he pushes too hard on the accelerator. Bill Truitt had to put a limit on his accelerator valve because it was scary to drive, it went too fast. He was using 90 psi, and, as he said, they said, it couldn't be done. His engine was an old refrigeration compressor from a big refrigerator truck with valves added to operate the cylinders. Ken. Why did the Eolo car, a version of the air car, fail to get into production in Italy in 2003? Scott Robertson. I don't know. Please send me the info you have on it. I stopped collecting information when the internet took over. My research is all from the library. Do you know where we used to go for information before the miracle of the internet? Ken. Did locomotives that ran on air exist in the 19th century and wasn't the idea put forward in England in the late 1600s? Scott Robertson. I don't know how far it goes back. Someone named Audacibius is credited by one source with the actual discovery of compressed air that goes way back before engines. I think he was the first barber or something. I covered air locomotives above. In 1870 James Clerk Maxwell told us how we should think about air engines and the second law of thermodynamics. Maxwell discovered the electromagnetic spectrum and was the first to predict discoveries to come using mathematics. He predicted the discovery of X-rays, gamma rays, etc. Einstein called him the father of modern physics. Maxwell said, you can avoid the law against using dissipated energy to do work with an air tank if you can sort the hot molecules from the cold molecules and put them in the two halves of the tank, isolated from each other. Then you're on an air engine, on the differential pressure. The sorting process is to be very low-key, something a little elf could do. Not beating the air to death with a compressor banging on it, something more subtle. The energy source is continuous, from the sun, so it is not beating the second law, just thumbing its nose at it. Basically he was saying that standard air compressors are a case of cutting daisies with chainsaws. Of course the physics people took hold of the little elf, and forgot about the air, and the tank. The abstractionists have made Maxwell's demon sound ridiculous by keeping the 140 years of controversy well away from the topic of unequal zones of pressure in an air tank, out of the hardware completely, and into the ivory tower world of pure abstraction, where the backyard mechanic who can't save the world with their cars will never be bothered with usable information. Tesla informed us in 1900 that a cold spot in an air pressure power cycle should provide us with a self-fueling air engine, and it was at that time that you started to see people in the technical world thinking of supplying ambient heat to compressed air engines. Ken, what prevented the further development of these historical vehicles into automobiles? Scott Robertson. The high energy content of a gallon of gas, as well as its formerly low cost. When I got my driver's license, gas cost 26 cents a gallon, so that's an increase over 35 years of about 1,500%. We can only hope that someone will get out into his garage and stay there till he finishes a real air car, and then instead of sitting on it or selling it to Detroit to hide, giving it to the world. Ken. I saw where there have been cars that ran on compressed air. There was one in the early 1930s, and it was said to be able to go 500 miles at 35 miles per hour. What stopped this from going into production, do you think? Scott Robertson. Every air car inventor who had remarkable results was asked to stop as soon as he got a patent or a newspaper article published. For example, Bob Neal developed a self-fueling air engine in 1934. And was refused a patent because the patent office said it was a perpetual motion machine. He built a small working model and took it to Washington, D.C. to show it to them, and they had to give him his patent because it worked. But the Germans saw his patent and came to his house, demanding his secret. This was before the war, so Nazis were still allowed in the U.S. He refused, so they kidnapped his daughter. Bob Neal was a simple shoemaker in Arkadelphia, Arkansas. He did what he had to do and got his daughter back. The family says he took the engine apart and scattered the pieces and never touched it again. A man who met him later in his life recruited me to try and make Neal's dream come true, long after Neal died. Plus the emphasis on Bob Neal's work on my website, http://www.irkrockcast.com. Ken. Would you buy an air car right now if one was available? Scott Robertson. Yeah, and if I couldn't afford one, I'd sell my soul for one. But none are available right now. Ken. Will a car that runs on compressed air still have all the amenities such as power steering, power brakes, air conditioning, and such, and if so, what will this do to the mileage? Scott Robertson. More reason why it shouldn't he have the works, if the self-fueling system becomes a reality. If it has a standard air car, the stop and fill it up variety, then extras would be a drain on the range possible between fill-ups. You'd have to have a heater for the passenger compartment, and lights, and a DVD player, but some of the other stuff is extra. Ken. What do you think the military applications of a compressed air vehicle might be, and would it actually have any advantages over a diesel or gas vehicle in the theater of war? Scott Robertson. War people would kill you with it easy, if they could make a profit doing it. I hate to think what would happen if the self-fueling air car went into production for purposes of killing. Not having to stop for refueling would be an obvious advantage. Not being operational on the moon, the main disadvantage. I assume that when man is living on the moon, we'll have war there too. Ken. I see that Business Week is reporting that the first air car that is going into production will have a powerful computer in it. The car seems to be very basic. Why is such a powerful computer necessary in such a basic package, do you think? Scott Robertson. I don't know which air car that is. Please send me the article. For example, the Ford/UCLA air car is to have electronic valves, no camshaft. So it would need a computer. IVE always been for keeping it strictly mechanical, but I don't know anything about electricity. The best use for electricity would be for heating the fuel air, as resistance heating is 100% efficient. Picture a pair of check valves in a series, inside a tank, at the discharge end of a compressor pumping air into the tank. Between the two check valves, a heavy-duty heater. A pulsing of air into the tank will be caused that literally sucks the air out of the compressor, lowering its workload to almost nothing. I think this is what Bob Neal was doing. Again. The new car is said to have a top speed of only 68 miles per hour, with a range of anywhere between 120 miles to 180 miles, and is more of a city car. How long do you think it will be before a car comparable to a gasoline car is produced? Scott Robertson. We have to wait for someone to come along and give their invention to the general public, like Harry Miller did. By the way, where I live, most vehicles go about 20 mph tops, and have to be refueled maybe 6 times a day to keep going. No one complains. Ken. I see that the new car has a compressor that takes 3 to 4 hours to fill the tank. Do you think that we will ever see one that will do it in the time that you can fill a gas tank? Scott Robertson. Yes, the idea of filling your car by plugging it into an electric outlet is not realistic. There will be air stations with huge compressors filling very big tanks, so that you stop and just transfer from the big stationary tank to the one in your car. It is very fast, but should be done by qualified individuals, no self-service. That's no big deal. In Oregon, the AVE never had self-service gas. No one complains. It's easier to stay in the car. With a big enough pipe, the fill-up could take less than a minute. Ken. Costs of running a car are a big part of the driving experience for many people. Aside from the price of fuel, how do all the other costs stack up? I am talking about fluid changes, repair costs, and such. Scott Robertson. Because the air engine is many times simpler than any combustion engine, there are fewer parts, fewer peripheral systems, they re easier to design and build, easier to repair, etc. They run cold, not hot, so lubricating oil lasts several times longer, as well as all the parts. Ken. Is there any reason that you know of that would prevent compressed air cars from passing the safety tests in the U.S.? Scott Robertson. Political corruption. Influence in the wrong places. Intimidation. People are afraid of anything pressurized, it is natural. People are not afraid of gasoline, that is unnatural. There will be a breaking-in period where people get used to the idea and stop being afraid. In the meantime, the status quo can and does emphasize the dangers of compressed air, even though it's the safest of the alternatives. I wouldn't want to touch a high-pressure leak of compressed air, but I'd choose it over a high-voltage leak of electricity or a flare of burning fuel. Ken. Is a compressed air car truly zero pollution? After all, there are fluids, batteries, and such in the car. Scott Robertson. Nothing we do in life, including eating, is 100% zero pollution. But the fluids in an air car last longer, the batteries don't have to do much since they re not use to run a heavy starter motor. There are ways of having oil-less compressors and air engines, for example, cylinders made of epoxy embedded with Teflon particles. But then what about particles of Teflon coming off in the atmosphere? Well, what about particles of asbestos coming off in the air when you apply your brakes? You have to accept some dirt in the world if you want any kind of machinery. Ken. If an electric car came out that ran on solar cells, would the air car still be the car of choice, and if so, why? Scott Robertson. Yes, because the air car uses a type of solar energy, dissipated ambient heat, that is at large in the atmosphere, which is available all night long. Solar cells depend on something that is available only part of the day, sunshine. Ambient heat is always available because the sun is always shining somewhere. Ken. Please tell us anything else that I have missed that you think we should know about compressed air-powered cars. Scott Robertson. One thing. Is the world ready for air cars? Do we even deserve something so perfect and convenient? What if we had free fuel, as much as we wanted, What would we do with such abundance? Party and fight and struggle, like always. What we really, really need, in my opinion, is not cars of any kind, but a vegetable garden in every home and happy families.